And unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for coming. Kind of wondering, how did I get into this? Okay. I suppose I walked into it. The child playing in the sunset doesn't see the sunset. The child is the sunset. So too is the seagull. The dog walking with its human companion. And the cyclist. So the blessings of Soto Zen and the blessings of Gaia House come together in this retreat. And I was thinking yesterday and today, these are beautiful days. And it's so good to share them with you. I think maybe that's the point of it all, is that we get to share this space, this practice, and this environment. We get to share these days with each other. And we get to do it in a way that we can appreciate that that is what we are doing. There are other ways to go about it. This is one of them, just one. I had some train of thought that I'm trying to reconnect with and it doesn't seem to be happening. Just bear with me for a moment. As I go about my day, there's little moments that I wouldn't see unless it was doing this practice. The little arrangements of the altar, the sounds of the bell, the meeting with people for practice discussion, encountering their practice, their energy, it's a way of meeting people, a way of meeting you in service, chanting practice. Our energy comes together, it's concertinaed, flows together into the one act. Zen chanting, or sometimes called service, it's like a group yoga where we're all doing the same movement. We act in concert. So there is a great sharing of energy. Being here together, just sitting, just being, coming into or onto a retreat together, says that this is important. It's more important than the other things that we could be doing, or it's as important as the other things that we could be doing. But it's important enough to set aside those things for 5 or 6 days. In other words, it means something to us to share this time together, share this space together, share this practice together. Share this wonderful surroundings. If you haven't been to the walled garden yet, I suggest paying it a visit. Such beautiful environs, such a beautiful countryside, such a gift. And in being present, we can really appreciate it in a way that might escape us if we were living our busy life. All this sitting kind of cleanses our senses, so that we can hear with fresh ears and see with fresh eyes. Some of you may have noticed this, how much more alive the world seems as a result of this sitting. So in doing this practice, we are relating to the world. We are relating to each other. And we are relating to ourselves. And we're relating in a way that just seems more fitting. Katagiri Roshi wrote a poem which I'm going to try to remember. I might miss one line or so. And the poem has ended up being called Katagiri Roshi's Peaceful Life. I guess he gave it the name Peaceful Life. Now that he's passed away, it's called Katagiri Roshi's Peaceful Life. And it goes, being told that it is impossible, one believes in despair. That's right. Being told being told that it is possible, one believes in excitement. That's right. But whichever is chosen, it does not fit one's heart neatly. Being asked, what is unfitting? I don't know what it is. But my heart knows somehow. I feel an irresistible desire to know. What a mystery human is. As to this mystery, clarifying the mind, knowing how to walk with people, demonstrating and teaching. This is the Buddha. This is the Buddha. I feel it's really impossible to become Buddha. But this eye, seeing what the Buddha does, vows to practice, to realize, and tells myself, yes, I will. Just practice right here, right now, and achieve continuity. This is living in vow. Herein is one's peaceful life found. So I was saying, Deshimaru said we do this practice so that we can die without fear. Maizumi Roshi said, we do this practice so that we can appreciate our life. I don't know what Frank Sinatra said. No, sorry. And I guess Katagiri Roshi is saying, we do this practice so that we can live a peaceful life. And that's kind of all there is to it. All of these things are true. But somehow that isn't enough for us. So we look for some entertainment. And our ancestors have kindly given us an abundance of entertainment in the form of koans and other Zen stories. For a brief moment there, when I was saying that last sentence, the train of thought that I wanted to connect with went through. That's it. It's like, it's not on the tip of my tongue, it's on the peripheral of my consciousness. Elusive. So maybe it will come while I'm talking about a koan, a bedtime story. Maybe it will come back and maybe it won't. So one of the great koans is, does the dog, now Guy House doesn't seem to have a dog. I haven't seen one. But a lot of Zen temples do. And when I was at Tassajara, we had a dog. A dog lived there. It's part of the community. And he found great entertainment in chasing squirrels. He's a very friendly dog and seemed to be happy at Tassajara. This brings into something else. There's a part in Suzuki Roshi, a Zen mind, beginner's mind, where he says, we should always be prepared to bow. So when I lived at Tassajara, as we pass each other on the trail, we would stop and bow. It's a great way to acknowledge the other person without engaging in distracting small talk. That's during a practice period. When it isn't a practice period, you can engage in distracting small talk. For a practice period, we're passing each other, we just bow. And this bowing expresses an appreciation, a gratitude, and respect. And really, as Buddhists, as Zen Buddhists, we should have this attitude towards all life. So I got to bowing to other things. Why just bow to people that I'm passing? I would bow to a tree. We also had a cat, and the cat and dog, they didn't exactly hang out together, but they didn't bother each other. It's like the great mountain and the white clouds. Yeah, they kept to themselves. They didn't play together. But the dog who liked to chase squirrels didn't chase the cat. So I would bow as I passed by, I would bow to the dog. And I would bow to the cat. You could see a difference. As soon as you stop and bow to the dog, he's coming, oh, what have you got for me? Right? You're going to give me something? Pet me? No. The cat, total indifference. Continue on. Didn't even notice that I was bowing. So then the question arises, does the dog have Buddha nature? Now, this question was asked to Jiaozhou, one of the great ancient Chinese Zen masters. And I envision the setting as being something like this. So, at San Francisco Zen Center, which means San Francisco, Green Gulch, and Tassajara, we have ceremonies where questions are asked. One of them is a shuso ceremony. And a shuso ceremony is where somebody is shuso for the practice period. And shuso means head priest for the practice period. So, priest can also be translated as monk. I prefer monk because it kind of, well, it could be Shaolin kind of thing. You're just dedicated to practice. And priest has kind of Catholic connotations for me. So I prefer head monk, but the more general or usual translation is head priest for a practice period. And the shuso shares during the practice period the teaching seat with the teacher. And at the end of the practice period, there is the shuso ceremony, after which the priest, or can actually be a lay person, not a priest, they're a teacher. They can teach, but they don't have the authority or empowerment to ordain. That's the difference. So in the shuso ceremony, everybody who is in the practice period, so it could be all of us, gets to ask the shuso a question. That would be approximately 50 questions for the shuso. And invited to the ceremony is all the former shusos that happen to be available to come. And that can easily be another 50 people. So all the former shusos that are able to come, come and ask the shuso a question, a dharma question. So the shuso ends up having to answer between 50 and 100 questions in one session. And that's their rite of passage. Right. So that's one form of the question and answer. Another one is I'm pretty sure it's called a shosan. So that's where the person leading the practice period is asked a question by everybody doing the practice period. And that's the situation that I imagine these questions to be asked when it says a monk asked Jiaozhou, does the dog have Buddha nature? So Jiaozhou said, Mu, which we're told translates as no. Now there is a story going around which says that we don't know that Jiaozhou actually said Mu, meaning no. He could have said Wu, meaning woof. Right? And I think about it and I think it's very plausible to think of a Zen teacher saying woof in response to that question. But there are circumstances that rule that out. So, let me continue. Jiaozhou said no. And if you read the Mumon Kan, it's Rinzai, sorry. The story stops there. So you can see how there would be some kind of room for doubt as to what Mumon or Jiaozhou said. And Mumon Kong is the gateless gate. This, I think this is the first case in the Mumon Kong. And if you can get your hands on a copy, the commentary by Mumon gives some very good advice on how to work with koans. So in it, he said, mu does not mean no, even though it does. Mu does not mean no, and it does not mean yes. What does it mean? And then your koan is mu. So Zen Rinzai monks will chant mu, 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 getting it deep into their consciousness so that it begins to reverberate and resonate and whatever. Okay. But in the Blue Cliff record, where the question is asked, does the dog have Buddha nature? Jiajo says no. And it's clear that he said no because the monk asks a follow-up question. And in the Shosan ceremony, and also in the Shuso ceremony, if you don't feel as though the first response meets your question, you can follow up with another one. And it's clear from the follow-up question that the monk understood the answer to be no. The monk says, I thought all beings have Buddha nature. How come the dog doesn't? And Jiajo says, because he still has impulsive consciousness. So that leads to the question, what is there about impulsive consciousness that is contradictory or in opposition to enlightenment? Now, although the translation is impulsive consciousness, I prefer to think of it as compulsive consciousness. So it's this sense of your choices being narrowed down and you feel compelled or compulsed into a certain course of action. So this does not have an openness. There is a closedness in this. So the monk says, I thought all beings have Buddha nature. How come the dog does not? I'm presuming they're talking about the temple dog. And Jiajo said, because he still has impulsive consciousness. So this is a clue. This kind of alerts us to becoming attentive to the times when we experience within ourselves compulsive or impulsive consciousness. And you could say, do men have Buddha nature? And the answer is obviously no. As the ad used to say, impulse. Men can't help acting on it. Okay. So, there was a second monk, and this also happens at Zen Center, Zen Center, Tassajara, where one person will ask a question and get an answer and say, okay, take that. But somebody else isn't satisfied with the answer that they got, so they ask the same question. Right? So a second monk, and I kind of envision this as happening in the same ceremony, but I've no evidence for that. It could have been 2 years later, or it could have been 2 years prior. There's no date and time given on these questions, or location even. So there's another koan in the Blue Cliff record, and it says, a monk asked Zhaozhou, does the dog have Buddha nature? And this is another clue as to the first answer was definitely a no, because this one is a yes, right? And this goes into the Zen thing, yes and no. It's not one or the other, it's both, right? So this monk asks Zhaozhou, does the dog have Buddha nature? And Zhaozhou says, yes. So this monk's follow-up question is, now wait a minute, I thought Buddha nature is pure. So how come the dog is going around in such a mangy old coat? Right? And Zhaozhou says, he does it for you. Right. So this is an allusion to the three messengers. The three messengers, or the first three sights, help us to stay on the path. They are reminders of the terrible terms and conditions that we've signed up for in this life. So here we have two things. We have impulsive consciousness somehow goes against the enlightened mind, and when we are suffering, we can bear it for the sake of others. We become one of the three sights. So it's our compassion is what helps us to bear our suffering. Our suffering is a valuable teaching and a valuable lesson to others. You were supposed to turn the clock so that I could see it. That's okay. Although I suppose I could always use my phone. Great. Okay. Now, so these are wonderful stories to reflect upon and delve into and muse over and see what we can learn from it. Each person might learn something different. It may be completely meaningless to you. Or it may be, yeah, I want to explore that. So being here together, sharing this life with all its conundrums and paradoxes and nuances, juxtapositions, and its beauty. We're all in the same boat. And we're making the best of it. The Buddha's path is called the Noble Eightfold Path. It is a noble response to the terms and conditions. So thank you for sharing these beautiful days with me and with each other. Thank you for bowing with me. Thank you for chanting with me. Thank you for sitting with me. In Soto Zen, koans are completely optional. Enlightenment is completely optional because we're already enlightened. We already have Buddha nature. What matters is that we express it. And we express it through this life of Sangha. We express it through our sitting. And we express it through our ceremony. We express it through our practice. In Rinzai Zen, that doesn't seem to be the understanding. The understanding seems to be that you have to get enlightened and we're going to put you under pressure so that you do get enlightened. Okay. But you come to them, you volunteer for that pressure. Okay. So there was a scholar, and I think his name is Andrew Ferguson or Bruce Ferguson. He went to China and he's written a book, I think, called Zen's Chinese Ancestors. And he stayed at various monasteries. And he came across a monastery which had Rinzai monks and Soto monks practicing together. And he asked the guest master, Rinzai monks and Soto monks practicing together, how does that work? And I mean, this was on he was showing photographs of his tour. And he said, like, the guest master, like classic Chinese appearance with the goatee beard and so forth. He stroked his beard and said, the Rinzai monks are trying very hard to become enlightened. And the Soto monks think they already are. That's it. So in Soto, there's really nothing to attain, but if you attain it, well and good. If you attain it, you still have to get on with your practice. It's not the end, and it's not the beginning. It's just like you have some kind of experience one day, and you have another kind of experience the next day. We just continue practicing no matter what happens. And it's the practice, the expression of this Buddha nature that is important, more so than the attaining it or gaining it. I have a strong feeling I will remember my original train of thought on my way back to my room. Such is life. Ah. Oh, almost there. Ah, yes. I think this is it. So last night I was talking about how we view, you've got the past and we've got the future and we've got the present, and the present is kind of this slice of time that's in between the past and future. And I don't think I finished my thought. I got to the point where it's like calculus, where you tried to get a smaller and smaller sliver of time that we call the present. And then I got on to, like, as soon as you recognize that something is happening, it's already in the past. Now, it might be minutely, fractionally, but it's in the past. And in our effort to be present, we want to be just present as it happens, which means that there's no actual point in, at that stage, beforehand, there is a point in labeling it or naming it or just observing that that's what your consciousness, that's what your mind does. When something happens, you describe it to yourself. But as that gap gets smaller and smaller, there is no room to describe it. And when it gets to the point where you just experience it, then time opens up, and the past, this is what I forgot last night, the past and future disappear. And there is only a kind of eternal presence, or present. So at that point, you have become the present, and the present is you. That was it. So I don't think I said that last night, but I think I meant to. All this stuff to do before I kind of... May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.